I talk to a spirit. She comes in my dreams.
What is the path to awakening supposed to look like, to feel like? How do you know if you are on it? We ask these very sacred and sometimes vulnerable questions to many different women from all walks of life. A conversation that needs to be shared and heard. I'm Jo Hendy.
I'm Amanda Parker.
And welcome to the Girl Awakening Podcast.
Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning.
Oh my God, we are so excited this morning.
Yep, we're stepping out into the wild, wild jungle.
We are.
With someone very special.
Absolutely.
Someone very special that we've had on probably, was it 12 months ago? Can't be 12 months ago.
It'll be close.
It'll be close.
We'll find out. But yeah, it would be close. And it was a very incredible, epic step into a space that we've been yearning for.
Yeah, it was.
Opened up a lot of energy around... you know,
just other realms of the awakening process, and
yes,
ones that are available to all of us. That it's so simplistic and so incredibly, I want to say grounding.
Well, literally, that's what was in my mind, because it was other realms, but so much on the ground, so real, and walking on the ground in this space of self-discovery and sovereignty.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, all those things. But we're going to, that was all about that person's awakening.
It was.
Which was very, very, very beautiful. And today we're kind of stretching that from a personal awakening to, I guess, what would you call like a...
Oh, opening to her blueprint.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of another word that would be silver lining, purpose.
Well, maybe this person might have...
A better name for it.
You say the magic person's name.
Britt Laidlaw. Mm. Amazing. Welcome, Britt. Welcome back. And welcome back from Naked and Afraid.
Thank you. Yes. The last conversation we had was very soon after I returned to Australia. But we couldn't talk about it then. It was all hush hush. Mm. So it's so nice to actually be able to converse about the experience now and come back for another conversation, because I loved chatting with you last time.
Oh, and we loved it too. We so loved it. Yeah. It was so amazing. Now, just really briefly for our listeners, because there was a little... You weren't supposed to go on this show, were you?
I was actually nominated. Somebody put me up and suggested me to the producers.
That's right.
And I went through the process and... I wasn't sure that it was going to happen or anything, and then I got 10 days notice.
That's right.
And they were like, we want to fly you to South Africa. You leave in 10 days. I'm like, holy shit. Okay, let's do it.
Wow.
Talk about living life on an impulse.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I mean, you know, the person that you are, the way you live, it's a full affirmation of the connection you have with living off the country, for one. I mean, far out. Your survival skills are put to the ultimate test, and in a totally different continent as well.
Incredibly different. Thankfully, it was actually a little bit more like Australia than many other countries they could have sent me to, because they do operate all around the world. So lots of people go to really tropical areas where there's a whole layer of like mosquitoes and infectious diseases. And
which
things
I've
like
watched,
that.
People have actually had to... get out of there
for
the sake of their own,
because their bodies are rotting,
their bodies are just being eaten alive by mozzies and other bugs. Which, that, how did you go with that side of things? Because by the way you're naked too, aren't you?
Yes. So the premise of the show is that you're placed in the wilderness, nothing around, no supports, and you have two survival items, and so you can choose what they are.
Two. I thought it was more than two.
No, it's two. And so my choices were a machete and a flint and steel, like a fire lighter.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
Yeah. And because I do know how to do fire with by friction with my hands, but when you're weak...
it's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought, just to not have to worry about that... So they were my two items. And then you're naked. Yeah. So you have literally no clothing or anything like that as
Which is a protection factor as well, isn't it?
Like absolutely. No protection. Absolutely. Mm. And you have to survive 21 days. So this particular experience isn't a last person standing. So it's not like as long as you can make it.
Yeah.
It's capped experience for 21 days. They do longer experiences as well. Mm. But this particular chapter of it is 21 days. Mm.
and no food, no water, no support. It is documented, so there is a camera crew out there that are with you.
Yeah.
So it's not self-documented only.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the experience.
And it's barren too, isn't it? Like, seriously barren.
Well, I feel like some of these shows, you can either choose one or the other. They either put you in a really tropical area where there's an abundance of food and water, but you have to navigate massive storms, so an abundance of rains, which makes fire really difficult, and also mosquitoes.
Yes.
If you get like a cut or anything, there's a huge risk of infection in those places, or they put you in an incredibly dry environment, like a desert, which means there's very little food, very little water, but you don't have to worry about insects so much, like mosquitoes or anything like that. And fire is a lot easier. So I had the latter. I was in South Africa.
I think that's a better choice.
I personally would prefer that.
I've never been in either, but I'm thinking that I'd rather be warm, first of all, than cold.
True.
Well, this is the thing. The thing is that it was very much like the desert. So it's beating hot during the day, 35 degrees, freezing cold at nighttime, hypothermic levels at nighttime. And so the temperature range is extraordinary. And I had to sleep so close to the fire.
I was going to say, did you spoon the person you're with? Because don't they say two people's body heat's better than one?
Well, it's funny because the only arrangement that actually worked was a really long fire. Because in this particular scenario, I wasn't alone. I had a partner.
Yep.
Was a really long fire, and it was kind of body length, and then we slept either side of the
fire.
What a clever
idea.
And yeah, because sleeping all snuggled up to each other, it means that you have to develop a fire on each side of you, so it's double fire, which is just not practical in terms of wood use.
Now,
and I noticed just, and we'll talk more about, but I noticed at one point too, you also hugging rock, like obviously rocks off the fire at a certain temperature.
It was a great idea.
That was actually put together by my partner who I was there with. She'd actually done the experience before, not in that
climate.
So
you were with a girl?
I was with a woman.
Because it's usually with a guy and a girl, isn't it?
It is. Yes. So it's usually with a guy and a girl, and I was with a woman.
Wow.
And I was part of the experience called Tribes Challenge. So I was with a woman, and then halfway through they say there's actually two other people out there and you need to go find them. I spent all of this energy building this, what the producers called at the end, because they're not allowed to talk to you in the experience, but at the end they were like, you built like the Taj Mahal shelters.
Wow.
I just dedicated myself to that shelter because it was freezing cold at night time.
Well, if you're comfortable, if you're more comfortable, then you know, you can stay longer.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love alone, which is very similar. And I know that the people that have actually literally built themselves like a log cabin or something like that, when they're comfortable and safe, they can just relax and last longer. And the whole body, as you know, the whole body and everything just shifts and change.
If you listened to Britt's episode last year, you would have heard her talk about the womb tomb. And that is a pretty incredible construction as well. So I can imagine the Taj Mahal in South Africa must have been quite impressive.
I worked on it because as well in survival skills, at least the lineage that I've learnt, we have what's called the sacred order of survival. And there's particular tasks that you do in a specific order based on our human needs. And number one is shelter. So it goes shelter, water, fire, food. And it's based on the law of threes. You can survive 3 hours until hypothermic conditions set in. You can survive 3 days with no water and up to 3 weeks with no food. So I knew going in, it's 3 weeks, 21 days. If I didn't have food the entire time, I'd be fine. It wouldn't be my preference, but I'd be completely fine.
Yeah.
And so I knew when I had the most amount of energy at the beginning of that experience, the energy focus should be on shelter.
Yeah.
Build a really solid shelter. Once I feel really comfortable in that, I can go for water and et cetera, et cetera. And I soon realized that sleep deprivation was going to be my most vulnerable factor. So when you're out there going on 21 days with 2 hours sleep sometimes evening will take you out, because it affects your mental stability,
everything.
It was very eye-opening, and so I knew that it wasn't just building a shelter for the sake of warmth, but having a place where I could have a comfortable sleep or gain as much sleep as possible was going to be a strategy that I employed to make sure mentally I could stay in the game.
Yeah, I reckon I'd be like that too because I love my sleep.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm listening to here and hearing as well, is that presence of mind and really very consciously creating the framework for you to be able to survive. And, you know, if you're just like, I'm going to be one with the elements, I'm going to go for this. I obviously, people who survive and, you know, are used to going off grid and living off the land have a very methodical approach to doing that successfully. But, you know, the whole context that you're talking about now, you're laying a very solid foundation to surviving and being there to your best potential. But then that twist where the producers, where you have to leave home again and go out and seek, how did that feel?
Oh, I just kind of roll with it as you do in life. Like, it's funny because, yes, it's a survival experience and very few people would get the opportunity to do that. But it's a powerful teacher for the rest of your life. It's goodness. So there's a change here. You're uprooted.
Yeah.
What do you do? Yeah. Do you stomp and shout about it, or do you go, okay, cool, we adapt and we move on and maybe we make an even more beautiful place? And where we ended up moving to was much better access to water. Like, oh my gosh, the first 10 days,
yeah,
I didn't realize how much I was dehydrated. But yeah, the second location, obviously had to build the house again, but was in a much better location.
Yeah.
And actually got to be really close to wildlife in the second location. So that was pretty cool. Made neighbors with a big crocodile, which the Americans in the show didn't really like.
Oh, really?
But as an Aussie, I was had a bit of a relationship and they all thought I was mental.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were like, are you sure you're okay?
Well, do you know, I watched one where the guy tried to catch, well, he did catch a little alligator or a little croc or something. Right,
There was no catching these ones. Yeah. We had, it was actually,
I imagine they'd be massive.
Oh, they were massive. Yeah. They were massive. But it was really, really cool because when you're, at least for me, I treated this experience, and I don't know if this will fully translate into a television show because, and I was prepared for that. I went into it knowing that I was really there for me, not to be like this survival badass lady and kind of playing into that narrative of survival skills, which is very man versus wild, us versus nature. I wanted to go in there demonstrating that, there's going to be difficulties that come up because this is like a rite of passage type of experience, being immersed in the wild, you know, we're with the wild aspects of our own psyche out there, which is often why people tap out. It's not so much like, oh, this is tough. It's the mental dialogue.
Yeah.
They're meeting parts of themselves that are really difficult to be with because you have a lot of free time.
Well, everything's dialed right in, isn't it? Everything.
Yeah, everything.
Like, there's nothing that's not.
Speaking of, the only part that being here in Australia that we've been able to see is a 3-minute trailer where Britt is sharing her experience of receiving her
cycle, but
monthly bleed.
But you got it early too. You weren't prepared for that, were you? Like,
no. I must have been either synced with my partner because she received hers as well, and also naturally when the body goes into a survival state, particularly a woman's cycle, she'll often bleed early.
Yeah.
And so I was conscious that that might happen. Yep. I was surprised that it did because it was a whole 2 weeks early.
Yeah.
But I danced with it and actually gave me the opportunity. I didn't expect it to be this opportunity, but I wasn't shy about talking about it.
Yeah,
and
which was
I know
beautiful.
That obviously there's been so many women that on the show that would have had that experience, but obviously they didn't choose to talk about that. Mm-hmm. Maybe the world wasn't ready for that conversation.
Yeah.
But I didn't even talk about it that much. Like, obviously it was only over this series of about 3 days. But they chose to have a really strong highlight on it, and I feel proud.
I do too. When I watched that, I was like, the world was ready for this.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be shared.
Yeah.
And it's so much grace and
it was beautiful.
Understanding that you, you know, you shared that very personal experience with your partner, but also with everybody by nature of it being on reality TV show. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of gift in that for everybody, let alone your own personal rite of passage that the experience, you chose to have the experience as.
Although everybody didn't see it that way. I read some of the comments and it was just like, I know. I wanted to swear and yell at them. I was like, fuck off. Like, you know, here's this girl being vulnerable and
And that was to be expected. It's like anything that reveals something that is disowned in self is going to be pushed back as a projection. I can't be with this in myself, and so I can't witness it in you.
Yes,
that's really normal, and I knew that that was going to happen to a degree because that's just where we are in terms of this conversation globally, sadly.
Yes,
but I also saw the perfection in that my intention going in was this kind of rite of passage experience and to demonstrate a different way of relating to the land.
Mm-hmm.
And what a better way to demonstrate this principle of reciprocity that I talk so much about than to offer my blood to the land, you know? And it's so common for survival type experiences to all be about fighting against nature and battling against the elements and it to be this really tough experience. And I'm not saying that it's smooth and easy and, everything works out perfectly. But I am saying that often there's a take energy in these, in that kind of style, which is just a microcosm of the macrocosm of culture.
Mm-hmm.
As I was saying, this survival show is just kind of a magnified version of the patterns that we see of everybody surviving in the modern world. And most people from that tradition of survival skills, I would say, come in with, I've got to use the natural resources, I've got to take, and even though there's a sense of connection, it still considers the land as a kind of backdrop or a resource or a not an animate conscious being that is actually part of your process as much as you are part of it.
Oh
gosh,
and
so beautiful.
To come in and offer my blood instead of coming in with this, I need this to survive, I'm taking this, it was like, all right, you're 2 days in.
And
now here's the opportunity to show up and give.
Oh.
What can I give of myself that is part of my, not just even part of my body? Because yes, there's the physical component of blood contains minerals and things that are supportive to the thriving of growth, you know, in a very physical way, ecologically. But also, can I let go of my ego? Can I surrender all the things that I want to get out of this experience, all the things that Brit as an individual wants to use this to prop up my business or to prop up my identity or to prop up my ego? And instead, can I let all of that go?
This is 2 days in.
2 days in. Can I let all of that go and completely give of myself to the land and the journey that she is providing and asking me? And in return, I get gifted a response. I'd get gifted very potent messages and learning experiences and a sense of connection, but also I'm gifted with a sense of responsibility as part of that, and I wouldn't change that for anything. So that was the experience for me, is to go in there and actually start off straight away from a position of giving. And because our nature is reciprocal beings, the law of this particular world is one of reciprocity. We see that everywhere with our inhale and exhale. There is nothing in nature that is one way. And so to go in there with this energy of being willing to give, naturally the response from the local ecology was to receive. And there was things that happened, like magical things, that sadly didn't get shown on the show.
Oh my God, please share with us.
Things just showed up.
Wow.
And it wasn't everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
Wasn't everything that my ego would have loved to be like, look what I did, see, I'm a great survivalist. But it was everything that I needed. And I remember one particular experience of this when I was digging what's called a gypsy well. So to get clean drinking water, there was a water source close by, but it was all murky and algae covered. And so a gypsy well is a big hole that you can dig in the ground and have it far enough away from the water hole that essentially the water seeps through the ground soil
and that is a filtration system. And so often you can empty out the first, like as you dig the hole, the bottom of the hole will fill with water.
Yeah.
And often you can just chuck out the first little fill of that, but the second round will be very clean to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was digging a gypsy well, and the intention was to start fishing. We're ready to find food, and trying to look for bait was quite a challenging because there were so few small insects. And my partner was trying to catch grasshoppers, which was like you could imagine bouncing around trying to catch grasshoppers.
Energy zapping.
When you're exhausted, like it's hilarious. And I just had this trust moment of like, it'll be all right. Like we'll find a way. I wasn't in this kind of panic. Oh, we need to find food. Yeah. It's coming to crunch time. And, you know, that even the producers were a little bit like, how are you feeling? Because it's a bit on edge with the food. And I said, I know it's going to work out. And as I was actually being interviewed or, you know, asked to say some things to the camera as I was digging this gypsy well, and I was actually explaining at the time this principle of, you know, the feminine in us and in the world, she needs to, have that principle of receiving, or, like, she just doesn't give out. Could you imagine if you just walk up to a woman and be like, give me the goods?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she needs some romancing.
Yeah. Mm.
She needs some tenderness. She needs to show that you're serious.
Yeah.
And before she gives you her heart, before she gives you her death, before she reveals her love to you. And so, and then it's generous, you know, but you can't go in expecting with this gimme, gimme. She needs to be romanced.
Mm.
And so, and that takes time and there's a patience that comes with that. And I was literally explaining this principle. Wow. And as I was digging this hole, I went with my hand and I picked up and there was a little frog, a little brown frog. And bless, we used it.
It's a little froggy of my
We used it as bait.
Thank you, little froggy.
Happened four times.
Wow.
Oh my God.
As I was digging. And I was like, she'll provide when it's time.
Oh.
And as I was saying that, I pulled out and I said, oh, look, just like this. Oh. And the cameraman was like, what is this voodoo? Like, it was hilarious. But there was many, many instances like that. Where there was just this deep sense of calm. Like, one was when we had the crocodile, so very close to our boma, which is the name for a shelter.
I was going to ask you, did you have to build a boma?
Yes, had to build a boma.
So can you explain to the listeners what that is?
Yes.
Because you're in South Africa. Uh-huh. There's a lot of crazy freaking animals.
So
there.
A boma is basically a ring of thorns, very, very spiky plants, which there are plenty of in South Africa. And the idea is to keep out animals because it is real in the fact that there wasn't people there protecting. Like there's leopards, there's lions, there's elephants.
That's terrifying.
There's animals, and I heard them every night.
That'd be very sensory enhancing, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
there was a couple nights where I heard a warthog or a boar being killed by a leopard.
Oh. Wow.
You hear this the squealing, and then you hear the roar, and then it's all over.
God.
It was
like, oh my God.
That is so weird.
Did part of you go, I wonder how far away that is? Should we go check it out in the morning if there's any leftovers?
Yeah, no, we did.
Yes. We did. It's like a nightmare, really.
Wow.
A beautiful nightmare.
No, it's Madagascar comes alive.
Yes. Absolutely.
So a boma is a shelter essentially to protect you from that. So it keeps those animals out. It has to be high enough so in case leopard wants to jump.
Yes.
And it scares them off. And so I had to build a boma, but it also has to be low enough because in the second location there was a very, very big crocodile. There's a couple of crocodiles, but one in particular that came close. And so I had to fortify the boma on the ground because it will try and nestle in there sometimes in the middle of the night.
My goodness.
No spooning.
My goodness.
But another perfect example of, you know, when it was happening, my partners in the experience were a bit freaked out by it, but I had this kind of deep sense of, you know, some people, if you're watching the show, you might be like, that chick's way naive, but I just had this sense that it wasn't actually there to harm. It got really close to the boma day by day. It got closer and closer and closer. But crocs are ambush predators. That's something that I have learned in Australia. And so how they attack is to catch you by surprise.
Yes.
So it's not going to waddle really close to you and then suddenly take you out. At least that's not my knowledge.
Yeah.
But the thing I found most interesting is that this croc would get closer and closer and would growl like a big dragon, and something would almost like spit coming out of its mouth. And that's why my partners were like, this is mental. It's preparing to eat us. And I had this deep knowing. I was like, no, something's actually not right here with this croc. Oh. And I know that we're going to be looked after. It's all going to be fine. But actually something's going on with this crocodile, and I could have that sensitivity.
Yeah.
And I later learnt that once the show wrapped up, a group of rangers, conservation rangers, went out there and they tranquilized the crocodile, and they found it had something caught in its throat.
Oh,
and so it was coming up and actually asking for help.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, people look at them and just say, it's a prehistoric creature, blah, 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 but they're... Wow. Consciousness of every being is so precious.
That's it. That's it. And it's that principle of whether you choose to see nature, including these animals or plants or elements, as something to fight against, something that we're in conflict to, or we can choose to see them as an animate, conscious being that is interested potentially in connecting, obviously with boundaries and with a little more respect and things like that, you know.
You weren't gonna go, let me have a look.
Exactly. But it's a different way of relating, a different way of seeing the world. And that was my intention going in there, to demonstrate a bit of that difference. I don't know if that's the storyline that they particularly chose, but I was surrendered to that and knew that that didn't matter anyway. I got told early on that I have to let go of all of that.
It's so wild.
Let go of control. It was an epic lesson in surrender.
I love just what you just said too, because Trevor and I go away up north or WA every year on an outback camping trip, and a couple came with us last year, and she's actually done work with you in your...
She's been in with you.
Oh, great.
Yes. Mm. And she loves it. And she's gone deep into it now.
Great.
But I used to always be scared of snakes. And she'd say, Jo, they're not going to hurt you. Why would the universe, you know, when you're – she said just – whatever she said to me just made sense. And I was like, I'm not like out there being mean to everything and everyone, so why would a snake want to come and be mean and horrible to me? That's kind of the way she said it to me. But just what you said then, you know, we're in connection and flow with everything, and just the way she said it changed my view on being scared of snakes. It was just like, oh, they're just another beautiful creature out there that's you know, doing its thing, living its life. If you leave them alone and don't touch them and don't go, you know, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's so true. It's like, you know, we really just need to see things through a different kind of filter.
Well, the question I would ask as well, and when presented with anybody's fear, whether it be an animal or of the dark or anything, is why?
Yeah.
Why are you afraid? And that's a really interesting question, because it's like, oh, ultimately it might come down to I'm afraid of death. I'm afraid of being pain. Out of control. Yeah. I'm afraid of pain.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, because a snake is actually a very strong symbol of the feminine.
Yeah.
Which is all about to do with the fullness of life, not just, you know, the death part of the cycle or transformation. It's the wholeness. And so that in itself is really interesting to me. It's like, that is the same narrative of why the survival skills is kind of man versus wild or conflict against nature. It's because, like, oh, we're actually afraid that we're not the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
We're vulnerable.
Yeah.
We are protected against the cycles of life, even though we would like to be.
But what's taught us that we are?
Yeah.
You know, not the earth.
Our disconnection.
The programming and everything else, you know, that's in us to make us fearful of all these things.
Yeah.
Not listening to ourselves.
Yeah.
The programming. Yeah. And there's a beautiful lady, Christina Rossiton or something like that, I think her name, or Rossiton. She swims with the sharks and has different footage of the sharks coming to her, and one particular shark didn't like to be touched, funnily enough. But, you know, it had a fishing hook in its mouth, and she just one day just reached in and managed to grab it and release the hook. Mm. And from then on, that shark was like her shadow. Like every time it came to her for affection and gave her, literally like a puppy dog would give affection.
Yeah.
And it's that, exactly what you described around the crocodile is listening beyond the obvious.
Mm.
What was obviously presenting was not the case. And, yeah. You know,
the fear is a barrier, isn't it? From connection.
So much more. Yeah. And obviously, you know, maybe that, maybe a bit of a totem animal for you on that trip, perhaps, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, when faced with an encounter with an animal so close, there's also an opportunity of, like, if it's fear that shows up, or if it's interest that shows up, or it's any kind of emotion, it's like, oh, just like how you would meet a human being and they reflect stuff back at you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I find you really triggering.
Yes, yes.
It's like, oh, I find this animal really triggering. Yes. What is that reflecting back at you? Yeah. What's the opportunity to explore something inside of yourself that is triggering that response? And yeah, it is often this kind of interesting fear of death. It is an interesting fear of pain. And what I want to say about that is not being like, not being stupid, like, rephrase that, being responsible, being responsible, particularly if there's other people involved, being responsible. But it's a very interesting experience, or a very, it's a portal. It's a portal to a whole new way of living when you can be with that pain inside of yourself, or when you can be with that fear. And I'll use an example that's coming to my mind. Recently, probably a couple of weeks ago, I was really wanting to go for a walk on the beach, but it was late at night. And I was like, no, I'm going to go for a little walk. And I was walking back, and then it started to get really pitch black. And I noticed that thing inside of myself that was like, oh, better run, like, go back in time. Like, and I started actually running. So I was like, oh, I need to get back. And I could feel that fear. And I stopped completely in my tracks. And I was like, oh, what am I experiencing? Oh, I'm afraid something's running after me. Something in the spirit realm is going to get me.
Yes.
And in that moment, I made peace and I said, if that is my destiny in this moment, can I allow it? Can I completely allow it? If this is my time to die right now, can I be at peace with that? Can I be at peace with what is? And if not, then I don't need to run.
Yeah.
Like if it isn't, you know, if I'm going to die, then I'm going to die. Yes. There's nothing I can do to fight that.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do to fight that. That is the thing, like, that I feel is interesting, is everyone thinks that they can build these walls around them or these cushions around them, and think that pain and death and endings, let's just call like death is an ending of some variety, you know, it's a rebirth in other ways, but that we think that we can cushion our life to avoid these, and it'll come for you whether you like it or not, and it will come for you when you don't expect it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there is things that you can do to be responsible, especially when there's other people involved, but if it's your time, it's your time. And there's a whole level of freedom that comes with that. I can't even begin to share with you. To go into a landscape and know that, oh, I can sit with all of this uncomfortability. I can be with those painful parts of myself, or I can be with those parts that feel like death, like it's so uncomfortable, I would rather die than be with this. I'm not afraid to sit with that. And that means that I'm not afraid in many other contexts in my life, and it's an incredibly liberating experience. Yeah. Like, I'm not suggesting that everyone go and live in or go and put themselves in a survival situation, but to have that level of trust in life.
Yeah.
It's all about trust.
You know? In life and in self.
Absolutely.
Almost that's where the empowerment comes in.
Yeah.
You feel like you're, and I don't want to use the word invincible, but it is like that. It's like, but in a good, responsible, wholesome, authentic way that you feel like you can now do anything.
Yeah.
When you have that trust that, okay, this is the next step I take is fine. The next step I take is fine.
And to bring it like back to, because I imagine a lot of listeners won't be going off and doing a survival experience in South Africa anytime soon. Maybe not.
Sometimes even going on a bus or a train isn't like a survival experience, because, you know, it's a challenging environment to be in, like, or outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Drive to work and then you've got to catch the bus because your car's not there. It's like, oh, you know, that's a out of my comfort zone experience. There's a lot of different everyday kind of moments that we can be challenged by.
Yeah.
Not a specific, not necessarily just a specifically deep, you know, away from the world.
Great.
So what you're talking about can apply to so many different, and what you're saying, the invincibility that comes can be applied to so many different parallels in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, great. And you're saying don't go do a survival thing, great, but you don't have to do a survival thing. Listen and...
No, look at the way you control your life.
Yes.
Look at the way you control your life to avoid discomfort.
Yeah.
To avoid having to face any painful experiences, any painful emotions, any sense of death or like endings in your life. Look at the way that you control to keep everything nicey-nicey, going along smoothly, and then how's that working out for you? Because like at least in my experience, is that only lasts so long until, ironically, you actually long for something.
Yeah.
There's something that you feel that you're missing. And I know this because I work with so many women on this particular point. And what I have learnt is, as much as there's a part of us, often a wounded child or like some kind of unprocessed part of us, that would like to have everything in control and would like to have all those needs met, the woman or the whole human, the adult, responsible, mature human that has important gifts to share with the world, that part of us actually doesn't want to be in control all the time.
Yeah.
It's like I've related this to living in Stepford Wives land. It's like where everything's perfect, everything's control, and we're so used to that. Being the good woman, doing everything right all the time. We've got the perfect partner, the perfect family, the perfect house, the perfect business, and people are fucking bored out of their minds.
Absolutely. So they start, they're like, something's around, missing. Start taking, drinking more, you
exactly
know,
having affairs.
Exactly.
Like, where's the excitement?
Yeah. Where's the mess? And the irony is, like, if we don't have the wholeness of our life in our life in some way, if we don't actually allow for the wholeness of experience, then we go and create it in unhealthy ways. By having affairs, by blowing shit up, you know, and because we need that part of it, and so it's like we grasp for it in unhealthy ways. So instead, it's like, oh, how can I actually let go of control a little bit and be with this wholeness without having to create it in this destructive way?
So how does Brit,
even prodding people to get a response, isn't it, in a negative way? I mean, that's also another way, isn't it? I want to see somebody behave crazy.
Yeah.
The personality traits go school with as well.
How do you go with navigating the line between trusting and but what if?
Great.
How do you know?
Yeah, great question. So when I feel a deep-bodied knowing, when I really know something, and often that'll come, I know it's true because it'll be uncomfortable. Everyone thinks, oh, I just know and it feels all good. And it's like often when something really hits you that's really grounded in truth, it'll often make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Like it's asking you to go in a particular direction. You're like, oh, that's a bit scary.
Yeah.
And so when I feel that knowing and it asks me to do something that makes me feel uncomfortable, let's say make a decision to change a relationship or to move country
something big,
inevitably there's going to be parts that are going to be like, what if, I don't know, like, and that's okay. I can make space for those, but I recognize that they're often based in a childlike or a wounded part that would just like to stay in control.
We just want to stay
in control and safe and we want to stay small and we're just used to this. And that part is actually attachment. It's not freedom. It's based on attachment.
Mm.
And when I make a decision that's really actually actioning that deep knowing inside of myself, how it's possible is that I have an innate trust in life.
Mm.
And that's because I don't believe that life is out to get us.
Yeah.
I don't believe that it's being hard on us or it's being cruel. Nothing in nature, at least in all my experiences out in the wild, nature doesn't self-destruct.
in the like everything in terms of when there's a breaking apart or a cracking open, it's actually in service to something. You know, doesn't just the energy is recycled.
Yes.
And it's never just death for death's sake.
Yeah.
Ever. It is always the decomposition of something to make space, to make fertile soil for something new and often even more beautiful to arise. And so because when I've witnessed these patterns in the natural world, when I experience them in my life, which is me as part of the natural world, I know that that I'm within a cycle of, like I'm held within a natural law. Like there's a cycle that works through the universe that is just the way it is. And if I can trust that, I know there's a flow that comes with that. It's a lot easier. if I can surrender to this knowing and take action of it, even though those other voices might say, oh, what if, blah, 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 I know that I am being taken care of because I know that this is the cyclic way that nature works and I am nature. And if something is meant for me, let's say a job, a relationship that I had to let go of as a result of making that decision, if it is actually meant for me and it's based not just on attachment but it's based on truth, it'll come back. It'll come back. If it's meant for you, it'll always come back, and it'll probably come back in a healthier form. That's been my experience of it.
I think that's, when you say that, I think about that in my own relationship. Because it wasn't a healthy start, my relationship. And then, so we separated for 3 years, and I was adamant that it was over. But there was still something inside of me that knew that it wasn't. And then, 3 years, and then we came back as completely different people. And it's been the most amazing thing since then, you know. But I was like adamant I was not. But it was that adamancy, or if that's a word, was coming from control. And rightness and all that, you know.
I know.
So it was like as soon as I let go of that and was like, And I remember one person saying to me, you and Trevor are supposed to be together. And I wanted to punch her in the face. It's like... I'm so much smarter than you. I know. My heart, you know, like all the proper shit. And it was just like she was spot on. And every part of me wanted to destroy her. Isn't that wrong?
No. You know what? The only time that consideration is like, okay, am I meant to be with this person? Is when there's neutral energy. It's not charged.
Yes.
So there's neither I need this person or I hate that person. And I don't want to be out with them just out of the spite of the fact that they hurt me in the past, and I'm just not going to be. Like, until both sides are neutralized and there's a willingness to see the perfection in everything that happened in the relationship before and what that was revealing about self, like ultimately I think the reason why we get into relationships sometimes that maybe break down and then get back together again is because there's still more to learn about yourself in those relationships, that is uniquely reflected to you through that person.
Isn't
that incredible how expensive it is when you embrace it from that perspective? That we're here to learn from each other rather than to gain from each other or control each other or just to look good together or all those things.
The other thing that's huge on the planet right now, and I feel like I'm literally going deep into the 3D even mentioning it in this context, conversation.
It's all right, we like it.
But it's like, you know, where people just get sick of each other and they're, I don't like her anymore, I'm going to end it, or I don't like him anymore, that's it.
Or the pina colada song.
And then don't realise that they're the same person is walking into the next relationship. It's going to take exactly the same thing and then they wonder why after the honeymoon period, after 6 months, why the fuck is this person doing the same thing? You know, it's like, well, you never cleared. It's so obvious.
You're doing the same thing too.
Yeah. It's wild that people still don't put those things together, yet they don't.
One of the biggest, like, portals of initiation and healing for me was healing the Disney narrative, which like massively.
And we've all grown up in.
Oh my God, I can't even tell you. So when I was younger, because I had a really challenging childhood with particular traumas, like there was beautiful things, but there was some challenging things. And I remember watching these movies and also like watching Moulin Rouge. I adored that movie.
Oh, that was beautiful,
my gosh. But it was this, but it was, there was all these threads of romantic love that because I had, I wasn't, I found love really difficult to receive in its form that it was in when I was a child. I imagined that romantic love was the answer. Like, oh, this is the thing that would, this is going to save me.
Yeah.
When I get this thing, then I'll really know what love is. See, this is the real thing. And I know that. And at a really subconscious level, that was really programmed into me. And so I went into relationships expecting at some level to be rescued by them, that everything was going to be fine once I got a relationship. And I think particularly for women, whether you're in a relationship with a man or a woman, like just the idea of being in a successful relationship is like a huge marker of success.
The trap.
In our lives. It is. It's like, it's like a... it's like a sense of, oh, self-worth. If I don't have a partner, like I'm less than in some way. And huge. So there's this big marker of success. And what I...
And it's affirmed to you constantly. Like society validates that on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that relationship isn't beautiful. Like it's very powerful. But what I want to say about it is if it's... I've learned that...
It's not the only avenue to who you are.
Well... Yes and no. Yes and no. Because what I want to say is going into it with this idea that it'll it'll rescue me. Ultimately, it's like I'm being rescued from my pain of all the things that were hard previously or that I don't like about myself. Like, see, this person loves me and I'll be rescued by that. Instead, like relationships are our most potent healing containers. They are.
Yeah. True.
But if you come in expecting to... that's the way that you're going to get love and make your life perfect, it's you're setting yourself up for disaster. Because the truth is, like, here in this land of duality, we come from the realm of like oneness, of unity, whatever you like to call, give the name to source, spirit. Our essence comes from this place of oneness where we're all connected, and we still are always connected to that. But then we incarnate in these bodies and we're born into the land of duality where there's masculine and feminine, black and white, day and night. There's all that. There's this land of duality, male, female. And so how we actually access the our lessons of wholeness, how we come back into the wholeness of self, which is a big healing path, is through the reflection of duality, through the reflection of the other. And it's not that the other person will be the healing path for you. It's that they will reflect where you are not whole in yourself.
Beautiful. Oh. Beautifully said.
Yeah.
I keep going. As you're saying that, I'm like, you know, we want people to fill our cup. Nobody can fucking fill your cup.
Nobody.
You have to fill it yourself.
Nobody. And so it's not that to make whole, like two people, it's like, oh, once I find you, then I'll be whole. It's like, no. The other person is simply just going to mirror the place where you aren't whole inside of yourself. And I do this in a chapter of my work that's actually going to be coming this year called Animus for Women.
Ooh,
and it's... So in Carl Jung's work, who does like analytical psychology stuff, he talked about the primary polarities or these primary parts of our psyche, which is, there's lots of different parts of it, but like the masculine and feminine, and everybody has these parts of us, no matter what physical body that you're born in. And if you are born in his particular frame of philosophy, he believes that, so if a woman is born in a female body, then she has something inside of her called an animus, and which is the unconscious masculine part of herself.
Oh.
And for men, it's called the anima. And the idea is that we are actually the partner that we're...
that's if I said it with my Kiwi list.
Yes, it's like enema.
Oh, yeah, it does kind of sound like that, doesn't it?
Sorry, keep going.
Back to Latin roots.
It's good to have a laugh and make it less serious.
Yes,
it is. And so I'm recognizing that there is a gender normative quality to this, but just listen in principle, is that so... inside every woman, there is an aspect of herself called the animus, is the name that Carl Jung gave to it, which is that the unconscious masculine. Mm. And the principle here is that the partner that we're seeking out, whether that be a male or female, we're not actually seeking the wholeness through them. We're seeking relationship with our own animus. Wow. And so this perfect, I'm just going to use like heterosexual relationship just for the example, but if we're seeking like this ideal man that has all these particular qualities, it's actually nothing to do with a human being outside of us, yeah, and everything to do with the internal beloved,
yeah,
that we actually long for, mm, that fully accepts, adores, mm, treasures, mm, us, loves us. Like, where are they absent internally?
Yeah.
And ironically, like, at least in my experience, in doing that work to actually come to that place of that work of internal wholeness and being in relationship to my animus, I don't actually have like interest in pursuing relationship. There's been points of like, oh no, I'm actually really happy. Yes. Of course, as soon as you're like, no, I'm actually really, yeah, good content, cultivating my someone own content. Someone pops up. People pop up.
Yeah.
Because that's the place where we truly magnetize someone from a healthy place. Yeah. It's not through attachment. It's not through, I need you to fill the void that I have inside of me. But it's coming from, I'm a whole being, yeah, that's relating to you as a whole being. I don't need to fix you. Don't need you to fix me. Yeah.
So much freedom in that, isn't there? Just even hearing you say that, it's like just so much freedom in there where you're allowed just to be.
Yeah, that's
it. You know, there's so many people that are unbeknownst to them too, not allowed to be.
Tell me more about that, like not allowed to be full self. Like, what do you mean by that?
Just let's stop. I just think there's a lot of that fan off.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot of people in relationships just settling because of that contentment that we talked about earlier. You know, they've got the nice car and they've got the children and a nice house, and that's enough. Mm. There's a lot of people that are in that, and that's okay. That really is okay if you're okay about being there. But there's just so much more available.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, I'll just speak personally for myself. I'm luckily enough, I don't even want to say luckily enough, I've worked hard. We've both worked hard to clear our own areas.
Animus.
Yes. To be, you know, and it's funny you say that.
Spiritual enema.
Yes.
They've done that.
Plugged each other's holes. Release and release and then release. Yes, something like that. Far out. Yeah, that's hilarious. Where for me it's like I have a lot more of the anima in me, I think. Mm. And Trev has a lot more of the animus, mm-hmm, the female. Mm-hmm. So
anima is the female. It's so the female. In a man, his anima is the unconscious, his unconscious feminine side.
Yeah.
And then in a woman is animus. It's our unconscious masculine side.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, it's.
So you're identifying with the unconscious masculine a lot. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, it's just really accepting the fact that whatever plays out, and like our relationship's not all rosy, mm, you know, we have moments, but we're at the place now where we have moments and we go, okay, what am I not looking at?
Mm.
You know, what are you triggering in me that I need to have a look at? Because whatever that you're playing out right now is making me hot and not in a good way. It's like, you know. And then we talk about it, and we're at the place now where that happens. And you know, sometimes it might take a little while to talk through these things, and it may get heated and all that. But we now are at a place where we hold each other, even in the heated moments.
Mm.
Where once upon a time I would have just gone fuck you, you know, and kind of
say that exit, like run
and down the exit, kind of not wanting to face.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, and it's like it's all about stepping in and facing now.
Oh yeah. And sometimes it helps to have a partner that's like, nah, I'm gonna stick with you here. I'm just gonna love you through this spot. Like, I'm not jumping in to fix or rescue. Totally respect that's where you're at. I'm just gonna love you. I'm gonna be here.
Yes,
I love you through it. But I wanted to actually say something, and it may be a little like, this is just my perspective. So I've had a lot of women come and work with me who are more holding that masculine pole, and they feel more embodied in that part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a beautiful book called The Heroine's Journey, which talks about this too. And
it's not necessarily a personal thing. It's very much cultural and sometimes
programming.
In our ancestral kind of lineage. Mm-hmm. But often when I see women embodying that more masculine pole is because there's a deep distrust and fear of the feminine.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why they will manifest a partner that is more like more a man feminine, or a woman that is more in their feminine, because they're mirroring back the part that they don't want to look at.
Yeah.
They're mirroring back the part that they have to heal internally.
Mm.
And it's not that that's bad or wrong. It's that we all have to, this is all parts of our journey. It's like, if it's not that, it's something else.
Yes.
It's a great concept to consider. I don't think people would actually kind of go there in that way.
Hear what you're saying. I've grown up with, and it's so funny because we literally, I had a havening session yesterday. Have you heard about havening?
No.
Oh, it's really lovely.
Yeah.
But went right back deep into my inner child. Mm. And it's about, you know, someone stroking you and doing these things and loving you in the moments of trauma or traumatic experiences.
Yep. Changing chemical pathways.
It's very interesting. Mm. So even hearing that, what you say, for me growing up, it was always like, get on with it, get on with it, get on with it. You know,
I can so relate. buck up, my mum used to say.
Oh, buck up.
Buck up. Oh. Like when I was crying, it was like, it was a sometimes a smack on the back of the head and a buck up, like stop crying type of thing.
Yeah.
Or in my case, like a lack of contribution to even recognize or understand what it was about. Well, you must have been naughty, or you've the feeling of being responsible for whatever happened was kind of reflected because of the lack of capacity.
Mm. That's it. It's like I look back now and I think I truly believe that us humans are actually doing the best that we can in the present moment. I do believe in the goodness of our hearts, like 100%. We may do challenging things, like, or things that were irresponsible at the time, but we are actually doing our best that we can with the information that we have. And so I know that, you know, those were challenging things to process as an adult, of like, you know, my emotions were literally smacked out of me.
Yeah.
But but I know for certain that the exact same thing happened to my mother.
Yeah.
And the exact same thing happened to her mother.
Yeah.
And there's a conditioning here. There's this programming here that no wonder even all the way back to beyond just my family line, but culturally, like the feminine was seen almost in association with the devil. Anything to do with the feminine qualities and characteristics, like I teach this in my work when we talk about one of the biggest blocks around embodiment, particularly for women, because that's who I primarily work with. But when we go through the earth framework, which we spoke about last time I was here, I think one of the sections in that is called Remember. And it's all about coming back into our bodies, fully inhabiting our bodies and developing our proprioception, developing our sensitivity from a perspective of empowerment. But one of the biggest blocks that I see on that in that journey is people's relationship to their sexuality and sensuality.
Wow.
And because particularly, let's just say sensuality and sexuality being two different things, but let's just go sensuality, is a feminine quality in that we navigate the world through our senses, through our body. There's a body knowing. The value that we give to body knowledge versus intellectual knowledge, and sensuality is the knowledge of the body. It's like, oh, I've got a gut intuition about this, or something doesn't feel right here, the hairs on the back of my arm are standing up.
What is it telling?
What is that telling me? And what we have, one of the reasons why I believe that the block, our relationship to that, is because historically anything that's been to do with a sensual way of relating to the world and using that to orient ourselves has been linked with the devil. Has been anything to do with the body and our relationship to the earth and connecting, like almost like our animalistic intuition.
Yeah.
Because those things are almost like animal-like qualities.
Yeah.
They are considered less than. They are considered like humans are at the top, and animals or anything to do that links us with being animal and not this like pristine, pure being.
Goody.
Close to God.
Close to God.
Mm. As opposed to, ape.
Exactly. And so in a lot of religions, different religions, particularly like Christianity and Catholicism, in its translation that was done by men, because there was lots of really pure qualities of Jesus's teachings that had nothing to do with that particular hierarchy of knowledge or the splitting of men and women or anything to do with that.
Mm.
But the way it was translated and put into the church, it basically said, if anything to do with ascension and leaving the body and going up to heaven and transcending and being pure and holy and, you know, even the color white of everything being light, that was welcomed.
Yeah.
And anything to do with being grounded in the body, which is sensuality, our like sexuality, our connection to the earth, our connection to magic,
which
all of these things. Our connection to soul, essentially, was considered demonic, was considered wrong. And this is what gave a lot of the missionaries and a lot of colonizers, in their mind, that's what gave them permission to take out indigenous peoples or to take out ecocentric people cultures, because they're like, they are practicing the work of the devil.
Witchcraft,
and same with women. That's why they took out women, because they're like, that's witchcraft, that's devil's work. Anything to do that resembled essentially feminine qualities, anything to do with the ascension was masculine, because it was God, it was moving up to God, who was a man. And anything to do with the feminine, which is being in the body, navigating the world through the senses, being in connection to the earth, was considered demonic. And so women, indigenous people, anybody practicing these more grounded ways of being in relationship to earth and our bodies was taken out, basically. And so we have this almost epigenetic memory of that as women.
Yeah.
And no wonder there's fear of being in our feminine, because we've been punished for it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that we get to be the victim. See that I'm blaming them for all the things. It's like, why was it done?
Yeah.
Because there's so much power in it. Because that's actually the power.
Yeah.
And so this might be challenging to hear for some, but like, you don't get to be victimized for your own power.
No.
You don't.
Oh my goodness.
Because like, you don't get to be victimized for the power that you've been given. Now there are things to acknowledge and to process, and that's a big part of the healing, and then soul, like translation of soul gifts from wounds into the gifts, not eliminating or bypassing history and the realities that we hold in our bodies in terms of those memories, but checking out of that, or like almost like it's the excuse for not stepping into our power. That's what I see a lot. The government doesn't support me, or the system doesn't support this, or this I can't do, you know, all these kind of excuses, and ultimately it's self-avoidance of your power.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Because
I hate that word. I'm withdrawing that word interesting. That is so wow. Like, I'm listening to you and thinking about, you know, we don't have to go that far back to see the man being, you know, that he's the God, I feel like I'm getting controversial, but I'm not. I'm just saying that the reality of the planet that we live on is that the man brings in the money and he's the more powerful one, and the lady just does, you know, stays at home and does the cooking and whatever else. Mm. And that whole thread still plays out.
Mm.
You know, and it's like there's no blame on the male or the female. It's another program that's come through, but it is time for the females to start probably standing up more, and not in an egotistical way, any of it. It can be done quietly, just knowing who you are and where you want to play and what you want to do.
This is probably going to be very controversial.
Yeah, yay.
and it's my personal perspective on
it. And it's your truth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is nothing controversial about your truth, honey.
And right. And it is that it's the kind of expansion of this on a bigger scale. So in my personal life, I know there's been experiences where I have had my whole life turned upside down. I've had really big hardships. I felt completely disempowered. I felt victimized. But at a soul level, like my human didn't choose those. Mm-hmm. Of course my human didn't choose those. Mm. But at a soul level, there was a perfection to it. And I know that at some level I consented to that. And why did I consent to that? Because that experience gave me the perfect opportunity to go in and translate that into a gift. Mm. And that gift is something I use in service for the evolution of humanity.
Beautiful.
And that is why I incarnated. So if I know that about my personal life.
Just a little thing.
Yeah, yeah. If I know that about my personal life, that at some level I can either choose to be victimized by my life experiences. I can acknowledge, oh, yeah, that was like my human really didn't enjoy that.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, my human would never choose for that for me. But at some soul level, like, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to choose to be victimized, or am I going to choose to translate this and see the perfection of it and translate it into something that I can use to support the evolution of consciousness, the evolution of humanity? And perhaps that's the exact reason why I came here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if I can believe that about myself,
mm-hmm.
can I believe that about the history of women at large?
Mm. Absolutely.
That, so the controversial thing might be to say here is that over that course of history where the feminine and how that was observed in women or cultures and things like that, how that was demonized and destroyed and tried to be hidden and tried to be crushed, what we know is that she wasn't. But it was this same deconstruction process that happens in our personal lives. And maybe that was actually all part of the plan.
Absolutely.
Of some cosmic plan that our human parts would never choose.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not to have no compassion.
Yes.
But at all.
No.
And this is where it gets really tricky but at some level, can we perhaps hold a perspective that maybe everything happened perfectly?
Yeah.
And that the whole intention is because that journey to the underworld that we've traveled over many years, the whole purpose of it was so we could rise again with the gifts that we learnt through that process and use those gifts to now serve the evolution of humanity in a way that only we can do, that only someone, a culture, a community, a person can do when they've traversed the underworld. Maybe that's the whole purpose.
Absolutely.
Maybe controversial to say that.
Why
because,
would it not?
Yeah.
It's the true shaman's journey,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's literally true shaman's journey because traditionally the shaman was chosen because of their wounds, because of their afflictions, physical, emotional, whatever they were. And for it's my beingness is just like just vibrating out here, like it's going, isn't that just the greatest gift to actualize?
Mm.
Well, we are those women.
We are. You know, for me, International Women's Day is the women that have gone before us, the women that are here today, the women that are coming tomorrow, and everyone is pivotal in where we're going tomorrow.
Mm.
And to embrace exactly as you just said, that we have not been suffering in vain.
Mm.
That there is a true purpose to that experience for each and every one of us and the collective feminine archetype, feminine experience.
Yeah. And not to say to bypass the pain that's come from that.
God,
there's a
very,
like, that is, we were talking about this earlier, is like that is the dance of the human and the soul, right?
Yeah.
It's like we can hold this awareness that at a soul level, it's all perfect.
Mm.
And we are also humans. And we have a body and we chose like this. The whole purpose of this incarnation is to fully incarnate the soul in this body. And so there are real human experiences that need to be processed and healed and attended to, and they can't be bypassed. And if they are bypassed, we'll never actually truly get the soul gift that is lying in there for us.
Well, this is the opportunity we have right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
To change the narrative.
Yeah. That's it.
That's all that needs to be done.
Yeah,
because we can't live through that lifetime again.
Mm.
We're just going to get the same results in 100 years or whatever else.
Well, we can. This is also the thing that I've chosen, like that I've realized, is that there's no hierarchy on this. But I do personally believe that everybody has come to Earth for a particular lesson or a particular path that they're here to experience. Mm. And some, like you were saying earlier, some just really happy, just having the little life where they, I shouldn't say little, that's rude. But having the life, having a life where they just, you know, they go to school, they have their family, they get the thing, and it's, that's their experience.
Yeah.
And that's what they're here to experience this particular round. Mm-hmm. That's where their soul's at. There's no hierarchy or good or bad at that. And then there are some souls that are here to do, had to have a very different experience.
Like you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just like me. I'll own it.
Exactly.
Like me. Like
yeah, yeah, like me.
The people that listen to this
podcast. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what I know is that if you're one of those people that is here to play a big role in the evolution of consciousness, in the evolution of humanity, then you'll be put through the ringer and have these initiatory experiences in life which give you the embodied lessons that you need to be of service.
Because you ask for it.
Because that's, yeah, exactly. At some level you chose this. And
your senses are at play. You see things differently. You hear things differently. You know, and as children that is, can be difficult. And as you said before, it's hid out of us or, you know, taught out of us, you know, the way that we sense things differently. But literally that I feel like what you're listening to, what you're saying is that the change makers or the narrative changers are people perhaps who do have that sensory connection and they're living through their senses more than they understand until they come to an understanding.
Yeah. And I want to say, like, I want to also give voice to the fact that sometimes that can be really, like, as much as it's empowering and it's like, oh, wow, I feel really deeply fulfilled. And there's a, it's really hard to even put language to the feeling that comes with that knowing. But there's also a very real human aspect, which is like, it's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes I look and I think, can't I just have this stuff?
Yes.
Can't I just la da da and
just
even
go on that holiday?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can't I just, like, I look on Instagram, I'm like, can't I just do, like, make $30,000 in 10 days like all these other people? Whatever it is. And so, can't I just operate at, like, sometimes I would love to just check out and operate at that level of awareness or consciousness where I don't have to think about this kind of the spiritual dimensions of life. It's just very much in the 3D or whatever. And it's like, it'd be really nice. And, you know, this is why we zone out to a TV show or something. Because, like, I just want to.
And literally, always my reason for turning on Netflix is I just need to dumb out for a minute.
It's wild. So, well, that's where social media has just taken off too. That's a whole other story. But that's to take us down that path, the exact path you were just talking about.
Yeah, because, and then there's been moments where, you know, I have played that game where I've kind of gone, oh, I'll just play in this arena a little bit. And life kind of gives me a bit of a smack because the way I, and I know it's love, but it's not in the way that we've given label to love. Mm. It's like, it's as if it's that motherly love. I imagine her saying to me, like,
it's the Gaia love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's like, you can't play in that realm anymore.
Yeah.
You've got too much responsibility.
Yeah.
And we're not actually, like, we gave you a little bit of leeway and now you know too much.
Yeah.
Mm. And we're not going to let you dance down there. It's kind of like, I don't like to use these hierarchical terms, but it's the image that's coming to me. It's like there's a sky rise building type of thing.
Yeah.
And you go up to the elevator and, you know, at first you're kind of hanging out on, like, on the ground level or like level two or something. And then you get little moments in your life, which take you up to, like, the sky level, you know, like, let's just say it's not that high. It's like level 10.
But that feels
like, and you're like, oh wow, and you have these little moments, and then you go through enough initiations, which actually mean that you stabilize at level 8 or level 9 or even level 10 or something, and that part is like, I want to go back to level 2.
Yeah,
just go back and live down there, and it's like, no, you live up here now.
Yeah.
And
I've heard many people say, well, I know that you know that saying, once you've opened the door.
Yeah.
It cannot be closed.
Yeah.
Once you know, you can't.
And it's, I use that analogy, but in truth, it's not. There's no hierarchy to that. No. There's an isness and a perfection to exactly where you are on the soul journey. Mm. Whatever people are learning in that ground level is absolutely essential, can't be skipped over, foundational. And maybe they've actually just come from being a freaking enlightened master Buddha or something, and they've come back because they're like, I want to actually see if I can go back from ground zero.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. We don't know.
No.
Wow. Yeah. What if I turn left this time instead of right like I did last time?
I imagine this as like some of the most, what we would label as like the most evil people on our planet. Like there's people that we think, oh, they're evil. Yes. They're just cruel. Maybe. We don't know. Maybe they were in a previous life. Maybe they were an enlightened master. Maybe they were, you know, a source of peace, and they wanted, their soul decided, I'm going to test this and see how much I can, like, can see what it's like if I can have the soul lesson of now being the nasty one.
I don't know. Star Wars, for that reason, is one of the most epic movies of all time. For that reason, I mean, Darth Vader turned good guy, turned bad. Turned good guy at the very end by his son. I mean, it's kind of the epitome of that experience of, I won't experience it all. You know, power at every extreme, is, well, I say power, but it's life at every extreme, isn't it?
You know? Well, this book that I'm reading, I mentioned earlier, The Disappearance of the Universe, is, they talk about that. You know, how, why, we, because it's two beings that come forth to share knowledge about Jesus, the real story of Jesus.
To blow a simple man's brain.
And he asked the question, you know, will you have another experience on earth? And they said no, because they learnt how to handle duality. And they could sit in both sides.
Yeah.
And so that there was no need for them to come back down. It was just like, oh, that's wild. That's how powerful duality is, and where, how it to use a better word, grounds us to the planet, to this experience.
Yeah.
It's because we're constantly living in duality.
Oh, there's so much here to talk about.
Yeah.
So I personally think the reason why we are seeing this kind of rise and evolution of the feminine is because what we have learnt in this land of duality, we need both the light and the dark, not good or bad, because I don't want to add those labels to them, but we need both the masculine and feminine to reach source, God, universe, whatever language you want to use that as the term there. So when I say God, it's not like a person or a man or anything like that. It's like the animate consciousness of the universe, let's just say. But we need both. We need both to access it. So what we have had historically over the last couple hundred, maybe thousands years, is a really strong emphasis on the light, the masculine, the purity, which is beautiful. It's an essential part of the cycle. But we've also seen the demonization of the feminine, and we saw that in the story of Jesus and Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Mary was completely forgotten, and like, and her gospel was buried. Like, it actually got told. So, the ministers or something at the time, I remember reading in the book Mary Magdalene Revealed, they demanded that her gospel be destroyed, and thankfully there was some people that hid it and buried it, and it was later found. And so what we know is that there was this story of these, it's just an archetypal story among many, but there was this kind of pure, godly, masculine figure that was associated with the light, with the heavens, with the upper realms, beautiful, like in the original teachings of Jesus, so beautiful.
Yeah.
But the feminine was like forgotten, destroyed, demonized. And what I believe is we're coming to recognize we need her. We need her to reach God.
God needs her to reach.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Like we need her to reach that place of oneness, of source, of great spirit. And so this is why that she's coming up. And this is why that we're seeing this kind of rebalancing on the planet.
Yeah.
is to see what happens when we're not in balance, you know, when we get out of balance. She is like, well, that look, Kali energy is like
the last freaking thousands of years, and what's been coming up in, you know, you just have to watch the TV. You know, like it's all coming to, it's coming out, it is coming out, like the time is, it's all run.
No, but it's incredible to
feel,
breathe
that,
into that space
yeah.
of, as you say, what, you know, Mary Magdalene, what her gospel, what the feminine has to offer when there's the reciprocity.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that's happened too that I see and I believe, my opinion on this, is that anything that's put in the shadows, anything that's suppressed, anything that has been demonized in us becomes kind of distorted. It's almost like when something's shoved under the rug, even though it's actually quite healthy and pure in its natural form, it becomes this kind of like demented version of itself. And you see that perfectly in the example of Star Wars or that movie, the playwright Wicked. It's like, you know, these experiences, it's only through when we suppress or shame or degrade or exile, essentially, when we exile certain parts of ourselves, they turn into these really strange looking beasts. And I think that that's what's happened to the feminine. And in a way, because there is a aspect of the feminine that is destructive, not for the purpose of destructing, for the destruction for the sake of destruction. As I said, nothing in nature never just dies for death's sake. But what we're seeing is this almost like distorted, angry version of the feminine that's like, well, if you're going to exile me, well, I'm going to mirror back to you the ugliness that you have inside of yourself. And if and you need to look at that, I'm going to keep revealing it to you. I'm going to keep showing you how ugly this part of, like, how I'm going to keep showing this to you by experiences in the world or reflections in the world that are so challenging to be with, because what it's actually doing is it's making me look at the parts of me that I've exiled, which have every capacity to do that. And the truth is, that's actually not her true expression. And what she's saying is, the longer you put me in the shadows, the longer you delay your union with God. Like, you need me. And so it's like, how do I describe this? It's, as I said, what's,
it's
mirrored.
It's not a power thing, is it? I keep getting not, it's definitely not a power thing.
No.
It has been for in the negative. But this is not about the feminine uprising.
It's
in
a wholeness.
It's about wholeness.
It's literally about
completion.
Wholeness.
Unity and connection and all of those things. It's got nothing to do with femininity or feminism or any of those things. It's
way beyond that.
It's way
It's a true essence. It's the true. It's like a, you know, I guess, you know, the cosmic spark is self sparking. Because of its wholeness and completion in its kaleidoscope of fragments and aspects and everything that is the energy force and, you know, magnets, positive, negative, everything has a duality. But when it's out of, as you're explaining, when it's out of context and when it's controlled or channeled in a, you know, in extreme senses, it takes on different forms that are self-destructive in a way that we can't no longer control. Come beyond us, you know, and we you know, and for some reason, as you said earlier, this is an experience we were meant to have in order to come back to, because from what I remember of some of the things I've heard about Atlantis was there was a balance of the masculine and feminine and in the beings that inhabited that space. But as the you know, fragmentation occurred in that society,
mm.
that was a part of the distortion and mm. the demise of that society. And I mean, that was a very long time ago. And then so, you know, these thousands and thousands of eons later, here we are coming back to what have we learned
mm.
around this space, and where, you know, the sacredness with you, the way that you connect with land and mm. her consciousness. Mm. For me, that resonates so beautifully with taking the wholeness with you where you go
mm.
and not being disconnected from your masculine or your feminine in the expression of what you're relating to in every moment.
Mm.
I just find that just so alivening.
Thank you. At this yeah. one, I'd also like, I'm reminded of one of my favorite myths. I teach a lot of mythology yeah, in my programs because these old stories actually carry these lessons. Mm. One of them is this story of the lindworm.
I talk to a spirit. She comes in my dreams.
Thank you for listening to our Girl Awakening podcast. We are also on YouTube as Girl Awakening. We'd love to see you there with comments on how our guest resonated with you or your own awakening. Please share the love with a like and subscribe while you're there. A blissful thank you to Ksenia Luki, the amazing artist behind our theme song. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.